Chapter 1. The end of the year brought the usual holiday festivities, though around the Fraser house there was little to cheer. Mrs. Fraser went through the motions of decorating a small tree and wrapping a few cheap gifts and baking cookies no one really wanted, and as always, she kept the Nutcracker running nonstop on the stereo as she gamely hummed along in the kitchen as though the season was merry. Things were anything but merry. Mr. Fraser had moved out 3 years earlier, and he wasn't missed as much as he was despised. In no time, he had moved in with his young secretary, who, as things developed, was already pregnant. Mrs. Fraser, jilted, humiliated, broke and depressed, was still struggling. Louis, her younger son, was under house arrest, sort of free on bail and facing a rough year ahead with the drug charges and all. He made no effort to buy his mom anything in the way of a gift. His excuse was that he couldn't leave the house because of the court-ordered monitor attached to his ankle. But even without it, no one expected Louis to go to the trouble of buying gifts. The year before and the year before that, both of his ankles had been unburdened, and he hadn't bothered to shop. Mark, the older son, was home from the horrors of law school, and though even poorer than his brother, had managed to buy his mother some perfume. He was scheduled to graduate in May, sit for the bar exam in July, and begin working with a DC firm in September, which, as it so happened, was the same month Louis's trial was on the docket. But Louis's case would not go to trial for two very good reasons. First, the undercover boys had caught him in the act of selling 10 bags of crack. There was even a video. And second, neither Louis nor his mother could afford a decent lawyer to handle the mess. Throughout the holidays, both Louis and Mrs. Fraser dropped hints that Mark should rush in and volunteer to defend his brother. Wouldn't it be easy to stall matters until later in the year when Mark was properly admitted to the bar? He was practically there anyway. And once he had his license, wouldn't it be a simple matter of finding one of those technicalities you read about to get the charges dismissed? This little fantasy of theirs had some rather large holes in it, but Mark refused to discuss it. When it became apparent that Louis planned to hog the sofa for at least 10 hours on New Year's Day and watch 7 straight bowl games, Mark made a quiet exit and went to a friend's house. Returning home that night, while driving under the influence, he made the decision to flee. He would return to D.C. and kill some time puttering around the law firm, where he would soon be employed. Classes didn't start for almost 2 weeks, but after 10 days of listening to Louis bitch and moan about his problems, not to mention the nonstop Nutcracker, Mark was fed up and looking forward to his last semester of law school. He set his alarm for 8 the following morning, and over coffee with his mom explained that he was needed back in D.C. "Sorry to leave a bit earlier than expected, Mom, and sorry to leave you here all alone with your bad boy, Mom, but I'm out of here. He's not mine to raise. I got my own problems." The first problem was his vehicle, a Ford Bronco he'd been driving since high school. The odometer had frozen at 187,000 miles, and that had happened midway through college. It desperately needed a new fuel pump, one of many replacement parts on the urgent list. Using tape and paper clips, Mark had been able to wire and jerry-rig the engine, transmission, and brakes for the past 2 years, but he'd had no luck with the fuel pump. It worked, but at a lower capacity than normal, so that the Bronco's max speed was 49 on level ground. To avoid being clobbered by 18-wheelers on the expressways, Mark stuck to the back roads of rural Delaware and the Eastern Shore. The 2-hour drive from Dover to central D.C. took twice as long. This gave him even more time to consider his other problems. Number 2 was his suffocating student debt. He'd finished college with $60,000 in loans and no job. His father, who seemed happily married at the time but was also in debt, had warned him against further studies. He'd said, "Hell, boy, 4 years of education and you're 60 grand in the hole. Quit before it gets any worse." But Mark thought taking any financial advice from his father was foolish, so he worked a couple of years here and there, bartending and delivering pizza, while he haggled with his lenders.